And good morning to everyone. Our first, first we should note that Justices Wright and Kelch will not be participating on any of today's cases. In the final two cases, we will be joined by Judge Reedman and Judge Arterburn from the Court of Appeals. And in the very last case of the day, Justice Miller-Lerman is recused. With that in mind, the first case of the day is State on behalf of Fernando L. versus Rogelio L. Is it Ms. Arango?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jamie Arango. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant in this case, Rogelio Lerman. There are three issues with the district court's dismissal of Mr. Lagunas' complaint to modify his child support. First, the court incorrectly determined that Mr. Lagunas has no tax liability and should not be given a deduction. Second, they incorrectly determined that Mr. Lagunas should not be given credit for a child that was considered in the original support order. Lastly, they failed to recognize that Mr. Lagunas' court order support places him beneath the basic substance limitation. I'd like to address each of these things one by one, beginning with whether or not Mr. Lagunas should have been given credit for tax liability.
What is our standard of review here?
Interview will be de novo, if these are errors. Argument. These are clear errors made by...
Thank you.
Errors in reviewing the report of the referee?
Well... we would say these were errors made specifically by the district court, not errors made. There were errors made by the referee as well. We believe the district court corrected some of those errors, but made new errors of their own.
I have a question about the procedure. There was a hearing in front of the referee, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And then an exception taken to the referee's report. Was there then another hearing before the district court, or did the district court conduct its review on the report of the referee?
There was another hearing held before.
Is that the procedure that is supposed to be followed?
That is the procedure that the state requested the hearing. We followed that procedure. Okay. The district court found that because Mr. Lagunas has not filed a tax return for the last 3 years, that he should not be given a deduction for taxes that he has not paid. We believe that this is an error by the court, and that the court should not have reported to Mr. Lagunas that he does not have a responsibility to pay taxes. Because he does have a responsibility to pay those taxes, he can be found guilty of tax evasion, just like any other person, and he can also file amended returns or late returns and still file those taxes. The fact that he hasn't done so should not have been taken by the district court to mean that he doesn't have a liability to do so. Yes, he does. He is responsible for paying those taxes. He should be given the same deduction as any other parent. The appellee in this case cites a case, State of Nebraska, on behalf of Andrew P. versus Brian B. from 2015, and argues that in that case, that this court undertook a review and decided that if a parent hasn't filed taxes, that means that they then waived claiming that because they were the ones that created the problem to begin with. That was not the review that this court made in that case. In that case, this court said that because there were not tax returns available, that the court could review all documents in trying to create the figure for the income of the appellant in that case. So the court decided that it wasn't a question of whether or not that appellant had to pay taxes, that was not the review that was made by this court.
So in Brian, the Court of Appeals basically says you haven't given us the documents to supply numbers into a worksheet.
Correct.
And so in this case,
the issue in this case. We provided the client's employer testified in front of the referee, and we provided pay stubs that were notarized by that employer for the referee.
What was the evidence?
I beg your pardon. Okay. Those were in front of the referee.
That's correct. And the district court did import those as evidence in their hearing.
I'm echoing Justice Stacy's question. Do you have a comment on that procedure? Is it proper?
I'm not sure if it's proper or not. Again, the state requested the hearing in front of Judge Harder. They were granted that hearing. We produced evidence at that hearing. We produced the defendant, and he did testify at that hearing.
What was the evidence in the record of the, if any, of the actual likelihood that your client was going to have to pay the taxes?
There was no evidence on the record other than his testimony that he was aware that he was responsible for paying taxes. He has not filed a return for the last 3 years.
Obviously, if he doesn't pay them, and he never pays them, giving him credit for taxes would overstate his exemptions and understate the amount of the child support under the calculations, correct?
That is correct, but what I think that this court should consider and what it should come down to is that it's really onerous to require a court to discover whether or not everyone paying child support is also paying their taxes. So that's where the Supreme Court Rule 4-205 and the standard deduction and the calculator and things like that allow a court to put numbers there, assign those numbers to the defendant, rather than go into a discovery that requires, are the taxes being paid? Are there back taxes owed? How much are you getting back in an earned income credit? Do you have actual tax liability?
The principle, though, is that the numbers are supposed to have some reasonable relation to reality. And what is it in this record that should persuade us that leaving those numbers out makes it no longer have a reasonable relation to reality?
I would say that Mr. Lagunas is no different than any other parent paying child support, and that he is required by law to pay taxes. The fact that he's behind on his taxes doesn't change that.
And when doing the worksheet, then how does the finder of fact deal with that?
They did
just guess what those numbers might have been?
Well, I believe they could do a few things. They could use a standard deduction based on the number of exemptions, the number of persons in his household. He will have to claim those taxes as self-employed because his employer testified that he pays them with cash. So using the self-employed...
essentially put the burden on the court to make facts.
No,
make
I believe
assumptions.
The burden would be on the parties to produce that calculation and then explain why the calculation is valid.
The court here said you didn't meet your burden. Isn't that what the court said?
The court here just said Mr. Lagunas hasn't paid taxes. We're not giving him credit for taxes he hasn't paid.
Doesn't that mean you haven't sustained your burden?
I'm not sure how a defendant would be able to introduce evidence that they have tax liability. It's the law. Every person has income tax liability.
Well, you only have tax liability if you owe taxes, if you earn a certain amount. If you're self-employed and you're a business owner or a farmer, you can take off expenses and things of that nature. So there's no evidence that he owed taxes. You say he has a tax obligation. He may or may not. He may have a tax obligation to file, but he may not even have that. If you don't make a certain amount of money, you don't have to file. There's no evidence of that, is there?
Well, we do have evidence of his income. So we do know that he has met the income guideline that he is required to file a tax return. And he did testify that he is aware of his responsibility to file that tax return, and he does plan on filing a tax return. He just had not done so. So there's no proof to provide to the court that he had paid that tax. But that doesn't mean that the tax isn't owed. So I think the burden that we're putting on courts is that they now have to examine tax history for parents paying child support and determine whether or not they're paying taxes. How much are they paying? Should they be given credit for those or not? And then when the tax code changes, like it recently has, do all of those orders now have to be reevaluated? Do we now have modifications based on a change in tax code? And that seems really burdensome for a court to have to undergo that type of discovery.
Isn't that why we asked for the last 2 years' tax returns?
I think that's proof of income.
Also proof of exemptions and deductions.
But we're still using a calculator. We're not putting manually putting in those numbers. So we still use a calculator to purport those taxes to an individual who's paying child support.
But you can't claim somebody on a child support calculations. You can't claim them on a tax return, can you?
That's correct. So that's our exemptions. You can change the number of exemptions and things like that. That's what the calculator allows us to do.
The tax return gives you evidence of that.
It does, but so do things. I mean, birth certificates were introduced in this case. And those would also be proof of the exemption.
Before your time expires, do you want to touch briefly on the other 2 points?
Well, I do think the court should continue its finding in Birch versus Birch that this is not an equitable decision. This awards $388 to the firstborn child in this family and basically leaves the remaining three children with $104 a month. That's not equitable. It's not fair. And it really puts a burden on this father to not be able to provide for his other children because of the order of this court for him.
With respect to the children, is this your position that the trial court misunderstood the evidence and that the 2010 order was based on two Fernando and another two children? Is that right?
And that was correct.
That would be correct at that time. And one of those, is this a correct statement of the record? And then at the time of this order in question, there's one of those children is deceased, but the other of the two that were accounted for in 2010 still exists and is in touch with the group, right? Okay. Is that right? So that's just an error in finding that there are no children between Fernando and the order, 2010 order?
I think the error in finding is that the court considered all children after born and did not undertake a finding of what children were subsequent to the order.
So the error of fact, according to the record in your view, is that all the other children were treated as though they came into existence after 2010.
That's correct.
Okay. And you think that the record would show contrary-wise that one of those three was prior to the 2010 order. Is that the error of fact? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Smith, good morning to you.
Good morning. Please, the court, first on the standard of review. The standard of review, that's on page one of my brief, is actually de novo on the record, but ultimately the district court's decision is affirmed unless it's an abuse of discretion. The de novo on the record, but that mixed standard, I think, would be if there's factual errors. And I think Judge Miller-Lerman, you've correctly pointed out the judge didn't make a factual error concerning that one child was born prior to the 2010 order. But I think, as my brief explains, that particular factual error doesn't make any difference in the ultimate decision, so that there was no abuse of discretion. The district court did not abuse its discretion by accepting the father Lagunas' word that he paid no taxes, and as a result, then concluding that there was no material change in circumstances warranting a reduction in child support. The district court's order concluded following three things. First, the father makes $10 an hour and pays no taxes. Second, that the state's position is if taxes are not paid, the father should receive no deduction, and the district court also concluded that the referee adopted the state's position, and so does this court. The appellant, Father Lagunas' testimony was, first, question, are you currently employed? Yes, he didn't say he's an independent contractor, he's an employee. Number two, how are you paid? Answer, in cash. Number three, question, do you pay taxes? Answer, no. The appellant father did not present evidence to the district court of his copies of his last 2 years' income tax returns, which are required by the child support guidelines. The evidence reflects that at the time of this hearing, he had that same employer for the last 2 years. I think the reasonable implication, since he doesn't present any evidence with his tax returns for the last two years for the same employer, is that he wasn't paying any taxes. And thus, there is no evidence before the district court supporting Lagunas' of having paid any taxes or any amount that he paid. It was his burden in the district court. It's his burden on appeal to show that the district court erred. This case should be an appeal from a decision on facts. The appellant is trying to make this an appeal from fiction. The facts are the father paid no taxes. The fiction is he should get credit to reduce his income for taxes that he admitted he does not pay. Chooses not to pay taxes. Frankly, that's his choice. But the result of his choice is there's more disposable income for child support. He doesn't get the benefit of both. He doesn't get the benefit of doesn't pay his taxes, and then he gets less child support because of taxes that he admittedly doesn't pay. The evidence actually shows his net monthly income is $1,733, giving him a credit for the support of the other child born in the 2010 order. You can look on transcript T34, the referee's worksheet. He gives Lagunas $327 credit for that child. That then reduces his net monthly income to $1,400. That's $100 higher than his net monthly income of $1,291 at the time of the original support order. In short, his income at the time of the hearing, his net income, even giving him credit for the one child born prior to the 2010 order, his income is $100 a month higher at the time of the original support order. There is no material change in circumstances, and ultimately the district court did not abuse its discretion by accepting Lagunas' word that he pays no taxes. Unless the court has questions, we would ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed.
What does the state have to say about the procedure that was followed of having a, apparently not just a referee hearing, but a live hearing in the district court?
The first thing I would say, they assign no error concerning that proceeding, so that's really not before the court. The appeal is from the district court's order. The procedure that the district court followed was there was a referee, but there was an appeal or a dispute over the referee's conclusion. The district court reflects from its order that we're just now going to proceed with an order, put the burden on Lagunas to present what evidence he wanted to support his ultimate claim. And ultimately, the district court has found that you didn't prove the case. They also don't submit for this court's review on a de novo on the record review of what actually any bill of exceptions before the referee, so there's really nothing there for this court to review other than the hearing before the district court.
Does it make a difference that you apparently requested that hearing?
I don't think it makes any difference. We requested it when they're not appealing the procedure. They didn't object to it. They're now assigning that as error in this court.
So is this how it proceeded when the father took the exceptions in the district court?
He took an exception to the district court. As I'm reading what the district court concluded was, it's now your burden to prove to me why you should get a reduction in child support. In other words, present whatever evidence you want to present. And ultimately, I think that comes down to what is the record that was presented to the board at that hearing. Because that's the order that's being ordered, not the referee.
Did the hearing before the district court include consideration of the evidence that had been before the referee?
They didn't mark the referees. They did not mark and receive in evidence the referee's report, but the judge's order, as I indicated earlier, that the judge necessarily considered that because when the district court says referee doesn't give you any credit for taxes, nor do I, means the district judge necessarily did review the referee's report.
With respect to the evidence, the body of evidence before the referee, what happened to that?
We don't know because we don't have any bill of exceptions of that. Ellen, who I would submit is their burden of proof, didn't prepare a bill of exceptions, didn't submit one to the district court, didn't submit one to this court. So whatever may have happened to that, I would say is their problem. And ultimately, the district court doesn't use its discretion.
The opposing counsel referred to pay stubs before the referee.
I think I'd have to look at that. I think that's in the context probably of a prior employer, because he did testify that he changed employers in 2014. But his testimony is he's paid in cash. The referee says there's no evidence of what your taxes. So
before the district court, the evidence was he's paid $400 in cash and doesn't file taxes. Which the trial court believed. The
trial court accepted his testimony. He paid $10 an hour, worked 40 hours a week. So cash comes out to $1,733.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Our next case of the day.